The public needs to have the confidence that this allegation is being taken seriously.
With sexual assault allegations hanging over Brett Kavanaugh, all eyes are on Senator Lisa Murkowski. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, September 19th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, legal limbo for CBD as it takes off as an additive to many things, including coffee.
I like that it does offer something a little bit different. It's something new.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Do you want to work at a job that contributes to the health of your community? Well, Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, or SEARCH, is hiring. SEARCH offers full-time jobs that include health, vision, and dental benefits, as well as paid time off and retirement savings. For more information, visit search.org/jobs and view open positions. Start a rewarding career helping others at SEARCH. Healthy is here. This message sponsored by the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium.
The allegation that Judge Brett Kavanaugh may have sexually assaulted a girl in high school has created fresh uncertainty over whether the Senate will confirm him to the U.S. Supreme Court. And Senator Lisa Murkowski is in the middle of it, literally. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
All I can tell you is what I know, what I was told.
A scrum of reporters now forms around Murkowski whenever she appears in a Senate hallway. Tuesday, the swarm followed her onto the underground train that runs from the Capitol to the Senate office buildings. A Bloomberg reporter was pressing her on the validity of a hearing with only two witnesses, the nominee and the California professor accusing him, Christine Blasey Ford.
Right. Well, the Democrats say it's a sham hearing unless there's an investigation and
Murkowski recoiled at the suggestion the hearing might be a sham, not the idea of additional witnesses. At the time, she was under the impression investigators would interview Blasey Ford and that they might testify. Judiciary Chairman Chuck Grassley says committee staff are investigating, but it's not the FBI investigation Blasey Ford has asked for. Away from the crowd, Murkowski said what she wants is a fair hearing that respects both the accuser and the accused.
The public needs to have the confidence that this allegation is being taken seriously.
Exactly what the procedure should be, Murkowski says she doesn't know. She's not on the Judiciary Committee, the panel holding the hearing. The new uncertainty lessens the likelihood that any Senate Democrats will vote for Kavanaugh, so his fate appears once again to rest on the two Republican swing votes, Senator Susan Collins of Maine and Murkowski. Every word they say on the subject and their demeanor while saying it is reported and analyzed. For Murkowski, the accusation is one factor. Before it became public, several Alaska Native groups were already urging her to vote no, largely because of his take on Indian law. Murkowski says she spoke to Kavanaugh about their concerns and says she's satisfied with his answers.
You got the impression that he will uphold the general status of Alaska Natives?
He has much said so.
The concern arises out of an email and an essay he wrote years ago suggesting federal programs aimed at Native Hawaiians may be unconstitutional. Since her earliest days in the Senate, Murkowski has been a proponent of federal recognition for Native Hawaiians.
But that is not something that Congress has ever passed into law. And so there is, you have a distinction there.
Murkowski says it's good Alaska Natives feel a bond with their Hawaiian counterparts, but Alaska tribes have federal recognition, so that puts them in a different legal category. And she says she's convinced Kavanaugh gets that. So as of now, Murkowski is reserving judgment on the 36-year-old assault accusation, but Kavanaugh's views on the legal status of Alaska Natives do not seem to weigh heavily as Murkowski contemplates her big decision, to confirm or not to confirm. Reporting from the Capitol, I'm Liz Ruskin.
A man linked to a missing 10-year-old girl's death in Kotzebue made his first appearance in federal court yesterday in Anchorage. 41-year-old Peter Wilson is charged with making false statements as authorities tried to find Ashley Johnson Barr. They say Wilson denied knowing the girl during questioning, even though the family says he's a relative and had been to their home numerous times. Assistant U.S. Attorney Frank Russo, the criminal chief for the U.S. Attorney's Office in Alaska, said in court a grand jury could also return an indictment against Wilson this week. If that happens, Wilson could be arraigned Friday. If not, he would return to court next week. The girl had been missing since September 6th. She was found dead last Friday, just outside Kotzebue, a town of about 3,000 people on the northwest coast. An FBI affidavit says Wilson had the girl's cell phone and GPS coordinates of where the phone traveled led to the girl's body. The affidavit says the girl's death appears to be a homicide, but the cause of her death remains undisclosed. Department of Justice officials say further charges would depend on what other evidence develops during the ongoing investigation. The Federal Public Defender's Office was appointed to represent Wilson. The state is holding a series of public hearings on a ballot initiative aimed at protecting salmon habitat before it appears on the November ballot. The initiative is facing stiff opposition from industry groups, union, and native corporations, opposition that was on full display at the Anchorage hearing on the measure held yesterday. Elizabeth Harbaugh from Alaska's Energy Desk has the story.
Half an hour before the hearing began, about a dozen people waving signs stood on a nearby street corner.
No!
The demonstration was organized by Stand for Alaska, Vote No on One, a group formed to oppose Ballot Measure 1, the Salmon Habitat Initiative. The measure would toughen the state's permitting requirements for projects built in salmon habitat. Inside, the room was packed, with attendees lining the walls and spilling out into the hallway. Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott, who oversees the Alaska Division of Elections, presided over the hearing.
Time will be very tight, and with the number of folks that have signed up, it looks like we will be hard-pressed to hear everyone.
Here, the well-organized campaign against Ballot Measure 1 made its presence felt. But the first speaker was Stephanie Quinn Davidson, one of the measure's sponsors and head of the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission. She argued that as companies pursue more large mines and oil developments in Alaska, the state needs to protect salmon runs from impacts seen in the lower 48.
We have the opportunity to finally get it right here in Alaska. My hope for our future is that we can learn from the past and choose a different path forward.
The president of Alaska Native Corporation Doyon, Aaron Schutt, delivered the opposition's official response. He argued it would have negative economic impacts.
This not only threatens our jobs and our economy, it threatens our rights as property owners and our ability to maintain or develop public infrastructure.
After that, there was a long string of testimony echoing Schutt's arguments against the measure. Alaskans working for mining, oil, and other resource development companies, and those that support them, turned out in force. That included Jim Hill.
This measure hurts our economy and hinders development and doesn't show how it will work any better than our current regulations. It's a development killer.
There was also testimony from industry groups like the Resource Development Council, the Alaska Miners Association, and the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, all against the ballot measure. Eventually, a handful of initiative supporters got their turn, including Georgiana Heverly, a commercial fisherman in Cook Inlet, who argued the ballot measure will ensure resource development is done responsibly.
We are willing to do what it takes to protect what we love so that our future grandchildren and their grandchildren know what it's like to stand on the aluminum deck of a boat and pick salmon from a net and provide the world a sustainable food.
Of the over 60 people who testified during the two-hour hearing, most were against it. When it comes to campaign fundraising, there's an even bigger imbalance. Yes for Salmon, the official group campaigning for the initiative, has raised just over $1 million, with support from environmental groups like Cook Inlet Keeper and the Portland-based Wild Salmon Center. Stand for Alaska, Vote No on One, has raised over $7 million, with major recent contributions from ExxonMobil and mining companies Coeur Alaska and Hecla. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, creating support systems to help curb rural suicide.
They need to feel valued. That helps them to feel like
somebody cares.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Starting October 1st, all of Alaska will be protected from the harmful effects of secondhand smoke because all public places across the state will be smoke-free. Everyone can now breathe easier as they work and play. Smoke-free workplaces and public spaces protects the health of all Alaskans. It also protects our youth from ever starting smoking. So if you do smoke or vape, please take it outside. For more information about the new smoke-free workplace law, visit smokefree.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Department of Health and Social Services.
Wrangell's water reservoirs were built more than a century ago, and the dams holding back the water are in bad shape. As KSTK's June Leffler reports, state engineers are concerned the dams might not survive a big earthquake.
Wrangell's upper dam leaks. That in itself isn't a new development or even dangerous, but there were signs that it might be getting worse. So the city hired engineers to check it out.
At this time, we don't feel like we have a high level of threat for a breach of the dam.
Amber Al-Haddad is the city's public facilities director. She says the seepage wasn't getting worse, and engineers cleared there were no signs of erosion or deterioration of the dam's material. But the city and state say there are definitely problems with the dam, which was built over timbers dating back to 1900.
Because they're so old, they had basically raised those dams on top of some old antique dams or defunct dams that were there once upon a time. And it's the kind of thing that you want to watch real closely.
Charlie Cobb is an engineer for Alaska's Dam Safety Program. His department is familiar with Wrangell's dams, and he says earthquakes pose the real risks.
Right now, we believe that they may not be stable under seismic conditions, and that has cause for concern.
According to a 2006 U.S. Army Corps of Engineers study, one of the dams is likely to breach during a magnitude 7.4 earthquake, which is big, but not unprecedented for Southeast Alaska. Cobb says Wrangell's levees are among the worst in the state. Upgrading the dams would be expensive, and there is federal assistance available. But federal programs are for dams across the nation, and Cobb says that makes them competitive.
It would be relatively difficult for Wrangell to compete with such small amounts of money because they're relatively small dams and a relatively small population at risk compared to large high-hazard dams in other locales that could have significant populations at risk.
That's not to say there isn't any risk to people and property. If one or both of the reservoir dams failed, it could hit City Park and flood homes, including one of the trailer parks. Together, the dams are holding back around 70 million gallons of the community's drinking water. Cobb said the feds put priority on disasters after they happen. There isn't enough preventative medicine.
Well, oftentimes there'll be money in emergency responses, but there has to be a natural disaster or some sort of disaster to begin with before that money's loosened up. Unfortunately, they don't provide money to prevent a disaster from happening to begin with. It's a quirk of the system.
The city knows this funding struggle, so for now, it's updating its emergency action plan for the dam system. It would outline what the city needs to do in case of catastrophic failure and the flooding that would follow. And federal funds, the city is applying. In the meantime, it's doing a survey to figure out which areas would be hard hit if the unthinkable were to happen. In Wrangell, I'm June Leffler.
A nationwide test of emergency alert systems that was scheduled for tomorrow has been postponed for about 2 weeks. Emergency management officials say that's to avoid any confusion with the response to Hurricane Florence on the East Coast. This test is unique in that it will be the first to send alerts to nearly every cell phone in the country. It will also include the usual broadcast alerts commonly heard on radio and seen on TV. The Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management says the test has been rescheduled to Wednesday, October 3rd. The test is aimed at improving the ways Alaskans are warned about disasters and identifying any flaws in that complicated system. And specific to Alaska, it also follows a January earthquake in the Gulf of Alaska and subsequent fears of a tsunami that exposed problems in how alert messages are distributed. Earlier this week, the Coca-Cola company announced it is exploring options for selling drinks containing CBD. That stands for cannabidiol, a mild derivative from the cannabis plant that has no intoxicating effects and is championed as a natural remedy for all kinds of ailments. In Alaska, CBD is already showing up in drinks at cafes and in stores. But as Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, there are simmering disagreements about its legality.
Behind the counter at Uncle Leroy's Coffee in West Anchorage, barista Madison McNaney is assembling a drink called a White Russian.
It's got agave and vanilla syrup as a sweetener, and then we're
It's a decadent frou-frou coffee drink, and for $2 extra, McNaney tops it off with some clear CBD oil from a small glass bottle.
It's, yeah, one dropper full, essentially. 1 milliliter, 10 milligrams of CBD.
Uncle Leroy's sells it as an add-on in coffee and what they call wellness drinks. The cafe is well-placed to capitalize on healthy trends, squeezed between a salad place and a yoga studio. CBD was barely on people's radar 5 years ago. Now, there's no shortage of blog posts, promotional videos, and local news stories extolling its benefits. A cure for everything from epilepsy to pain to anxiety to insomnia. Uncle Leroy's owner, Austin Schwartz, decided that having CBD on the menu was a good way to offer customers something you wouldn't find in other coffee houses.
I like that it does offer something a little bit different. It's something new.
Schwartz is hardly the only one selling CBD in Anchorage and beyond. Not only can you get it in coffee drinks, but at garden stores, at health and supplement shops, even as a topical cream at Walmart. Last year, CBD sales in the U.S. were worth $190 million. Schwartz uses a CBD oil made in Colorado and is assured there's no legal or regulatory rules he's breaking by selling it to customers.
We've spoken to a few different distributors, and it's something that doesn't require a different type of business license or regulation.
Schwartz has never been approached by state enforcement officers or police about selling CBD. But whether or not it's legal depends on who you ask. And bear with me, because this is where things get really complicated. Because you're not supposed to send CBD into Alaska through the mail. And
there is no industrial hemp that is actually legally produced in Alaska right now from which to extract CBD to sell legally in the state.
That's Erica McConnell, the head of the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office, or AMCO. Now, you'd think that as the state's top official over marijuana policy, that McConnell would have authority over CBD, since, after all, it comes from the same cannabis sativa plant that produces the buds, edibles, and concentrates for sale in retail pot stores. But that would be wrong. Industrial hemp, which produces CBD, is actually regulated by the Department of Natural Resources. And that's because hemp in Alaska is supposed to be grown under a pilot program outlined under the federal Farm Bill. And McConnell's argument is that because Alaska hasn't set up that program, the CBD that's showing up can't have been produced locally. So it's not legal, it's just that no one is enforcing those rules. What's more, she worries that there's no one watching out for quality standards over a little understood substance.
There's just a lot of unknowns about these particular products, and so I think we're in a buyer beware situation.
AMCO isn't the only government entity that's concerned. The state's Department of Environmental Conservation, which runs a food safety program, says there's no lawfully approved sources of CBD available in Alaska. And so the substance can't be sold or used in permitted food establishments. The U.S. Postal Inspection Service says that under the Controlled Substances Act, it's still illegal to send marijuana extracts through the mail. But Garrett Graff, a Colorado-based lawyer who handles cannabis issues, says this guidance is outdated ever since a federal court ruling in April.
The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals explicitly found that the Farm Bill preempts or supersedes the Controlled Substances Act.
Graff says that courts have found if a state has a rule about industrial hemp, then that takes precedent over the much older Controlled Substances Act. So even though CBD might technically be a controlled substance under the older law, for states like Alaska that are abiding by the newer Farm Bill, then it's fine. And according to Graff, that extends to transport and commerce.
Practically speaking, as an emerging industry, there's plenty of confusion.
Amid competing interpretations, confusion is something that everybody agrees on. This is an issue other states are grappling with as well. Different departments within the state of Alaska are still trying to fully resolve the legal status of CBD. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. Lead is bad for the health of Alaskans, especially for young children. It affects developing brains, so even small amounts are unsafe. Lead can be hiding in older paint, workplaces, ammunition, fishing weights, aviation gas, and marine paint. If you think you or your child has been exposed, ask a healthcare provider about testing. Get the lead out, Alaska. Learn more at leadfree.dhss.alaska.gov. This message is brought to you by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
In villages with high suicide rates, Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta residents are grappling with a healthcare system that isn't equipped to help them. So communities like Mountain Village are combining traditional knowledge and Western counseling to build support systems of their own. KYUK's Teresa Katsourilis reports.
Village Police Officer Annabelle has thought about quitting her job many times. It's the community that keeps her going.
People on the street would literally just stop and come over and give me hugs, telling me not to give up.
As the community's de facto first responder, Anna's responded to dozens of suicide attempts with little training or support. For now, though, Mountain Village is quiet. It's a dusty Saturday afternoon, and Anna has finally gotten some sleep. And it's the day of the March of Hope. When we arrive at the school, about 15 kids and young adults are goofing off near the jungle gym, unfurling a long banner drawn on butcher paper.
Hi, Silas. How was you?
The March of Hope has been organized by Mountain Village's tribe to promote suicide prevention. It's just one of about a dozen events and initiatives that the community's launched in the past few years.
If YK is not going to step in and help us with these issues, who's going to do the follow-ups? How often are they going to follow up on them? What can we do for their aftercare?
In a region struggling with budget cuts and an overburdened healthcare system, Mountain Village is developing systems of its own. And mental health experts believe this grassroots approach to suicide response is actually more effective than an institutional one. Flying suicidal people all over Alaska for treatment is expensive, not to mention disruptive for patients. And the clinicians in places like Bethel or Anchorage don't fully understand village culture.
We have really short-term clinicians that work in those places. We really don't know anything about how things work locally.
Lisa Wexler is an associate professor at the University of Massachusetts. She started out as a clinician in Northwest Alaska and has studied Alaska Native suicide rates for the past 20 years. In her view, the solution should be to empower communities to care for their at-risk neighbors themselves. Programs that can be implemented locally should be encouraged and funded. Healthcare providers throughout the state agree, though few of their initiatives have actually reached Mountain Village. The Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation in Bethel has placed a behavioral health aide in the village, for instance, though turnover in those positions is high. Mountain Village has made do without one for up to a year at a time. So the community is cobbling together grants to fund its own programs.
Well, to me, it's just overwhelming.
Leanna Wild is the program director of Native Connections, the group behind Mountain Village's March of Hope. Funded by a federal grant to the tribe, the group is devoted to mental health and suicide prevention. Wild and her partner, Sharon Alexi, recently received training in suicide response. They haven't responded to many crisis situations yet, but Alexi says they both know how to support people who are considering ending their lives.
They need to feel valued. That helps them to feel like somebody cares.
Mountain Village created its own Department of Justice last February, which tries to address the underlying trauma that can fuel suicidal thoughts. Tribal judges like Eugene Landlord provide substance abuse counseling.
When they're sober, they come and thank me. And I tell them, you're the one that should be congratulated, not me.
The tribe's wellness coordinator, Daphne Joe, works with survivors of domestic violence and sexual abuse.
People who are victims of domestic violence and sexual abuse, it does hurt a lot. It's a scar. But I try to give them hope.
The community holds regular healing circles, and a group at the local Covenant Church has created a chapter of Fire and Ice, a substance abuse support group that's similar to Alcoholics Anonymous. These programs aren't perfect. Mountain Village can be disorganized, and none of these programs have the funding they need. But while the YK Delta's suicide rates can be daunting, solutions to the problem can be simple. Experts like Lisa Wexler have found that a single heartfelt conversation can make a difference. In Mountain Village, Native Connections sponsors movie nights, field trips, game nights, and basketball camps, all to build a sense of community. Sharon Alexi says the events help young people build coping mechanisms and problem-solving skills.
Because to me, a kid knows a lot but doesn't understand a lot. You know, it helps them grow and flourish and prosper into a healthy young person.
The March of Hope grows as it weaves through Mountain Village. Kids are running behind Anna's truck. Sharon Alexi holds a handmade sign and looks excited.
I'm pretty satisfied with the turnout, actually. I saw somebody recording, they're waving, they're aware now. They could see that we're trying to bring hope.
The march ends at the old airport, where a group of about 20 kids gets ready to roast marshmallows and hot dogs. Anna shows up with a large grill, but doesn't stay long. Pretty soon, she's back in her truck.
Mountain Village Police Department, VPO Bill.
There's been another call. About a month after the Walk of Hope, we received a text from Anna and gave her a call right away.
Let me read to you the letter I turned in when I resigned.
After 8.5 months as a village police officer, Anna Bill decided to quit. And in the fourth and final episode of this series, we're going to find out why. In Mountain Village, I'm Teresa Cotsarillas.
This story is part of a series on suicide attempts and treatment in Mountain Village. The full series is available at kyuk.com. And that is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at AK Public News. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Elizabeth Harball and Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, June Leffler in Wrangell, and Teresa Cotsarillas in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com. And by Raven Alaska. Raven serves Alaskans in over 115 communities across the state, from Valdez, Utqiagvik, and more. Information at flyraven.com. Want a fulfilling volunteer opportunity educating and protecting your community? As a trained Medicare counselor, you'll help stop fraud and connect people with the benefits they've earned. You can make a powerful difference for Alaska seniors. Learn more at medicare.alaska.gov or call Alaska's Medicare Information Office at 800-478-6065. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Did you know there is no safe amount of alcohol to drink while pregnant? But why should this matter if you're not pregnant or not trying to be? Because nearly half of all pregnancies are unplanned. Many women don't know they're pregnant right away. You could get pregnant and expose your baby to alcohol even before you know you're pregnant. If you're having unprotected sex, don't drink. Learn how FASDs impact everyone, even you, at letstalkfasdak.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.